Al will be forever the myth.
You're the king of kings, Al.
There's always a pecking order. The little peckers never mess with the big peckers. So I'm a rooster, and he's a chicken.
This episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast is brought to you by our sponsors, Old School Labs and Florida Alternative Medicine. All right, welcome everybody to another episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast, where we talk to the legends of bodybuilding, and we also talk about the history of bodybuilding. And on today's show, we have a very special guest for me. This is a guy I grew up admiring out in the Chicago area. His name is Glenn Kinnear. And Glenn, if you followed bodybuilding in the 1980s, you know that he was one of the top amateur bodybuilders competing in the NPC. Glenn would routinely go into the North America, the USA, and the Nationals every year, and he would always be in the top five, sometimes the top three, sometimes second place. Never got his pro card, but he was always right up there. And before he was doing that, he entered and won the 1986 AAU Mr. America and also the AAU Mr. World that year. So when I was growing up in Chicago, Glenn was like the first real bodybuilder that I ever saw in person. I used to see him at Delt's gym that we trained at out in Chicago Ridge, Illinois, which was a suburb of Chicago. And I really looked up to Glenn. He's about 4 years older than me, but he had a great physique, even at 20 years old. And he was winning all the local titles. And I followed his career, you know, all the way through when he was competing in the bigger titles like the Mr. Midwest and Mr. Illinois and things like that. And then he went on and he moved to Arizona and he opened up a gym out there. And then he won the Mr. America contest, as I said, in 1986. And it couldn't happen to a greater guy. Really super nice guy, as you will see in this interview when you hear. And it was just great talking to a guy that I knew from Chicago from way back in the day. Brought back a lot of memories. In the interview, Glenn talks about competing against Tim Belknap, who, of course, was the Mr. America winner in 1981. And Glenn and Tim sort of grew up together competing. And they were rivals on the stage. So that's going to be an interesting story. And he also tells us his memories of the great Sergio Oliva, who was in the Chicago area. And we got to see Sergio all the time at the contest and guest posing occasionally or handing out trophies. And then also Glenn talks about moving to Arizona and opening up his gym, Hoppy's Gym, where a lot of guys trained, including Mike Ashley. If you remember our interview with Mike Ashley, Mike talked about training at Hoppy's Gym out in Arizona. So we got a really, really good interview coming up with Glenn Kinnear. I'm really excited about it. And hope you guys will enjoy it as much as I do. All right, not much really going on in the world of bodybuilding this week. I was still recovering from my trip to Colorado all week. I didn't get back to the gym until Wednesday. And then when I went in there, I ended up straining my back, just doing my back exercises, if you can believe it. I wasn't even doing anything for my back. So I was out of commission pretty much all week. I'm going to try and get back to the gym this weekend. My birthday is tomorrow, so we're going to go out and celebrate that tonight. Have a little dinner with my girlfriend, a couple of my friends, and continue tomorrow. I don't know what we're going to do tomorrow. Maybe go plan on going to the gym again and then maybe go to the beach and go out to eat. So just enjoy it. We got great weather out here in Tampa. It's finally like in the 80s again. It was cold all week, but it's warmed up again. So it's perfect weather. I went out last night and celebrated my friend Eddie's birthday. He's one of the owners of Powerhouse Gym in Tampa, the Powerhouse Gym Athletic Club. So we had a big surprise party for him at a restaurant out here in Tampa, and a lot of the people from the gym showed up. Dave Batista was there. He's a real good friend of Eddie's, and he used to train at our gym also, so he was there. So that was a good time. And like I said, I'll be celebrating my birthday tonight and tomorrow. So I'm looking forward to it. Good health, I have good family, good friends, so I got a lot to be thankful for. And still training hard, always training hard, always trying to look good. Doesn't matter what the calendar says or what the number is. Always just trying to look good, as good as I can. I heard a really good interview with Sean Ray this week on YouTube. It's under by a company called Mind Pump. So check that out when you get a chance. It was like a two-hour interview. Sean is a great speaker. He's very articulate, and really is one of the best guys in the bodybuilding world who's able to really articulate his thoughts in a really great conversation. So it was an excellent, excellent interview. It's over 2 hours, and he talked about a lot of things, including the state of bodybuilding today and how bodybuilding changed a lot. And that was very, very interesting. Talks a little bit about the drugs and the chemicals involved in bodybuilding that changed a lot of these physiques, probably for the worse. I think everybody agrees with that. So check that out. It's on YouTube under Mind Pump. And I think they also did an interview with Flex Wheeler as well, but I didn't get a chance to listen to that yet. We had a couple other birthdays this week. Lee Labrada turned 59 earlier this week, I think on the 8th. And Mike Francois turned, I'm not sure how old Mike is. I think he's a little bit younger than me, but he had his birthday on the 4th. So a lot of Pisces, a lot of bodybuilders who are Pisces. I think LQ Gurley also had a birthday this week as well. So happy birthday to all those guys. Lee is still doing great business-wise, and his son is really successful. He's an IFBB pro now. And Lee's also looking great, always training hard and still looking really young. So congratulations to Lee. All right, I do want to mention that we are brought to you by our sponsor, Old School Labs. I've been with Old School Labs for several years now. This is the supplement company that draws on the wisdom of the golden era of fitness and bodybuilding to offer unique supplements for the discerning athlete. I'm talking no proprietary blends, no artificial flavors or sweeteners. You may have heard of their award-winning fat burner, Vintage Burn, which is the world's first muscle-preserving fat burner, or Vintage Blast, which is the world's first two-stage pre-workout. Old School Labs is the only brand that I use, trust, and associate my name with. They're the brand I used to win the Natural Mr. Universe title in the Masters division in 2012. They're also the company that sponsors Breon Ansley, two-time Classic Physique Olympia champion, as well as the Arnold Classic Physique champion. They also sponsor 1983 Mr. Olympia Samir Banoot, bodybuilding legend Tom Platz, and also Chris Cormier, the real deal. So use the discount code LEGENDS12 and you will get 12% off your order when you go to oldschoollabs.com. Old School Labs, supplements that make sense. All right. And in our interview last week with Doug Brignoli, I did get a few comments on Facebook. I didn't get any emails about it, but I got some really nice comments on Facebook. Doug himself thanked me for putting him on the show, for the opportunity to be interviewed by you on your show. He said, "John, you are a pillar of the industry and a gem in our beloved bodybuilding community. It's a privilege to share the spotlight with you." All right. Thank you, Doug. Mark Martinez, who I interviewed 2 weeks ago, said he enjoyed the interview. He said Doug was a fixture in the Southern California bodybuilding scene due to his accomplishments and his personality during the late 1970s and throughout the 1980s. His knowledge of exercise physiology, coupled with his track record, is going to reach millions of people. Rafael Oliveira said, "One of the beautiful physiques of the golden era. Great, Doug, an inspiration for me." Roger Schwab said, "That was a fantastic shot," referring to the picture I posted on Facebook. Bob Kaiser said, "Is the closest body to Frank Zane." Rick Valente said, "Doug Brignoli is always in great shape, smart man, and a great bodybuilder." Alok Pandaya said, "He looks forward to this interview." Sean Ray commented and said, "Classic." Mark Anthony Funuccio said he loves Doug Brignoli, always listens to him. And Tom Terwilliger said, "Doug was and is still an awesome athlete and human being." And my friend Pete Fancher said, "When I had my shoulder repaired the week prior, I heard Doug in an interview talk about cable squats. I did them starting a couple days after the surgery until I could start training totally again. It was a lifesaver." All right. So thanks for those comments. And the guys from Bodybuilding Nerds Radio were back on the air this week. I think they skipped a week because of the Arnold Classic, but they were back and they gave a review of the show. And I think it was VJ listened to it and he really liked it. So thanks for listening to that, guys. I always appreciate your reviews. I always look forward to your reviews on Bodybuilding Nerds Radio every Friday morning. And I did get a really nice email from Randy Phillips. He says, "Morning, John. My name is Randy Phillips. I'm 64 going on 65 on August 28th this year. I've been lifting on and off since I was 15. I'm on again since last October. I listen to your podcast Monday through Friday while working out in my garage every morning. I train around 3:30 in the morning. I had went to Gold's Gym back in 77. I saw Tom Platz working legs. I took a picture with, I believe his name was Jay Silva, Mr. California. Later that year, I heard he was stabbed and died. I enjoy your podcast. I really was motivated hearing Bill Grant's interview. Oh, when I heard your podcast on Ed Corney, it was great. I remember back around 89 or so, I went to Gold's Gym in Fremont, California. I was working out, and who did I see? Ed. We caught eyes, and he walked up to me, and he introduced himself to me and shaking my hand. What a great and trendy guy he was. Thanks for all you're doing. Randy Phillips, Semper Fi." All right, Randy, thank you very much for that email. That was nice. And we hope you enjoy these podcasts as you're working out in the gym at 3:30 in the morning. Wow, that's amazing. I have trouble getting up at 4:30 in the morning. All right, so that was our comments and our emails. If you guys want to email me on any comments or any suggestions you have for the show, just email me at naturalolympia@gmail.com. good reviews, bad reviews, whatever. I always enjoy hearing your emails. I always enjoy hearing from you guys. And I hope our audience is getting bigger and bigger out there. We also brought to you by our other sponsor, Florida Alternative Medicine, where age is just a number. If you want to feel great, optimize your energy levels, burn fat, and balance your hormone levels to maximize your potential, then go see the experts at Florida Alternative Medicine and Weight Loss. They have a certified and knowledgeable staff that will work with you to achieve your goals and get you the results you've been looking for. They offer a wide range of services that ensure you will not only look and feel amazing, but also be comfortable knowing that they are there for you every step of the way. Their competitive pricing, along with their quality products and services, are just a few reasons to give them a call. So call them at their office number, which is 813-922-8939, 813-922-8939, or you can reach them at their website, which is flalternativemeds.com, flalternativemeds.com. And tell them that you heard the ad on the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. They will give you a free consultation, plus they will give you 20% off your order. All right. So here is our interview with Glenn Kinnear, a guy I grew up admiring as a kid in Chicago, and he went on to win the Mr. America. You're really going to enjoy this interview. Here we go. All right. Welcome back to the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. And I have a very special guest on the line with me today that some of you may have heard of interviews of me talking about how I grew up. And I grew up in Chicago. And one of the first bodybuilders I ever saw in real life was our next guest. And this guy was a real big inspiration to me when I was a teenager. And his name is Glenn Kinnear. And Glenn went on to win the 1986 AAU Mr. America. But I knew him way before that when I was just a teenager. So, Glenn, it's great to talk to you, man. Great to finally reconnect with you.
Yeah, no problem. You make it back to town once in a while. But lately, I've been in Chicago and visiting Phoenix here and there, where I got a bunch of my family still located. Hopefully, someday I have a place in Phoenix and Chicago.
Oh, okay, cool. Yeah, I didn't know where you're living. I don't know if you're in Phoenix, where you relocated to, or if you were back in Chicago.
Well, you know, I got all my kids now in Chicago, but my oldest one and her husband and two children getting ready to move back to Phoenix, but having most of them here, and I still got three at home, so.
Wow. How many kids you got now, Glenn?
I got five kids, four daughters and a son.
Okay.
31, and my youngest is the boy who's 21.
Wow, yeah. Yeah, I see their pictures all the time on Facebook. That's great.
Yeah, thank you, man. It's my pride and joy.
Yeah, for sure. So, Glenn, let's talk about your bodybuilding career. The first time I ever saw you was that Mr. Ford City contest. Remember that? But the Ford City, for people that don't know, was a mall in Chicago. This is when malls were really big. And they had a contest right in the middle of the mall. They set up the stage, and they had a powerlifting event. And then they had guest posers, and then they had the contest. And you were the winner. I think it was the first one they ever had, probably late 1970s, right?
I want to say that was probably 78 or 79.
Mm-hmm.
I'd gotten a phone call maybe just a week prior to the show. They knew that I was one of the guys that, even though I tried to gain weight, I never seemed to be able to put on as much as some of the other guys I knew.
Mm-hmm.
So I was fairly close to contest shape, and I thought, you know what, why not go in here and see what I can do? Wasn't quite sure, being a mall contest, who would show up and how. But yeah, so I went for it and came home with the trophy, and I was happy with that.
Yeah, and they covered that in the, I think it was in the Chicago Tribune or the Sun-Times, one of those two. And I remember they had a big spread on it. It might have been the Tribune because I think it was a whole page of all the pictures from that event.
Nice. Yeah, you know, I competed so frequently back in the late 70s. I tried to find every contest I could enter.
Mm-hmm.
Just starting at 18 years old, I competed in every teenage thing I could find.
Right.
I had a dozen shows, and then 79, there was only very few teenage lefts that I haven't entered.
Mm-hmm.
So I started going into the juniors and eventually into the misters.
Yeah. So what got you involved in bodybuilding, Glenn? What was your inspiration? What age did you start?
Geez, I was super young. I had to be about maybe 14 or 15 years old, just like yourself, John. And
yeah,
I was cleaning up a local tavern, and the owner, an old man, he bought a car from a lady, and there was some weights in the trunk. he gave me those weights. I took them home and basically just fell in love with the feel of it. So good to me. I never put them down and, you know, been doing it ever since.
Yeah, yeah. Now, was there anybody who inspired you to start competing, Glenn? Because I know we used to always read the magazines back then. That was our big source of inspiration.
Yeah, I was, you know, inspired by basically everybody in the books. But I got an uncle of mine who was a Vietnam vet, and he had a good buddy of his, a guy named Wally Binner, competed in the, I would say, 60s. Mm-hmm. And he had a handful of trophies from, like, Louisiana.
Okay.
So I started working out with him and my uncle. And my dad would drive me, you know, from one town, Chicago Ridge, where we lived, all the way to Midlothian. And we started working out together. And Wally was the only bodybuilder that I knew that ever competed. Mm-hmm. And had trophies. And so when I became friends with Wally, he helped me a little bit with some posing. And he helped me a little bit with the diet. And that back in 77, actually, when I started, the only diet was the, you know, real low carb diet.
Right, so, right. That's what everybody's doing.
That's what I did for a while. But I started to notice when the contest was over and I ate, you know, I looked better than I did when I competed. So what I started doing is just backing the diet up. I'd go no carbs.
Mm-hmm.
And then a couple days prior to the show, I'd add the carbs back in and I started to learn how to peak.
And, okay.
Out of all things in bodybuilding, I think, you know, if I had any plus to my game, was probably learning how to be in shape for the day of the show.
Right.
Like that, I had blown it once or twice, but for the most part, I never was able to get as big as I wanted to or as big as some of the other guys. But I always seemed able to get in shape for that day.
Yeah.
Eventually, I changed my diet after about 5 years of competing. I met Lance Strayer. Lance gave me a big help saying, you know what, we need to do is let's change this diet. And at the time, I was going with a high-carb diet and a medium amount of protein, very low fat.
Mm-hmm.
And then I left enough time right before the show to go with my no carbs and then carb back up for a couple of days.
Right.
And it just seemed so much easier that I thought, geez, I can compete for the rest of my life at that point.
Mm-hmm.
And I went on to compete from 77 to 1990 was my last contest.
Okay.
So it seemed to just make it so much more enjoyable. It felt so clean and so easy on my body.
Yeah.
I even loved it more than I did when I started. So.
Right.
It was
really
cool.
And you said you had trouble gaining weight, so you're probably a little bit more ectomorphic than ectomesomorphic. So the carbs probably work better for your kind of body, right?
Yeah, yeah. I thought, you know what, this is really good. It kept me that full.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, when you're training and you're looking in the mirror, like, okay, you don't feel so skinny. But out of all the years I did compete and work out, I never felt big.
Yeah.
Not once. I remember showing up for the AAU Mr. World, which was actually a show in Arizona that I had won before the Mr. America.
Mm-hmm.
And at that point, there was a few friends of ours that I'm sure you remember were saying, oh, man, you know, what happened to Glenn Kinnear? Looks like he found a secret. And I'm like, hey, like, what are these guys talking about? And then when I seen the pictures, I thought, wow, for the first time, I felt full at a contest. And yet I still had enough cuts and definition to go ahead and win that AAU Mr. World.
Yeah, yeah. So what was the first show you ever did, Glenn, when you were a teenager?
The first contest I ever entered, I was in Illinois, and I probably done one of the gyms we were at, Hammers or Delts, or there was, you know, signs hanging up for the Junior Mr. Illinois.
Okay.
And at the time, I knew nothing about bodybuilding as far as juniors or teenage or mister. So I thought, you know what, I see on the poster, they were giving top 10 trophies away. And I thought, man, my brother, you know, had trophies for baseball and hockey, and I had never won anything. So I thought if I can get in this contest and perhaps, you know, just win a trophy, I would be a little teenager. So I wind up entering this Junior Illinois back in 1977, and there's 11 contestants. And I thought, oh, my God, well, hopefully, you know, today's my day.
Right.
Come trophy time, they call. Well, the promoters there said, instead of us calling one guy who didn't get a trophy, we're going to call all 10 guys. So listen up, you know, and sure enough, my name was called, and I was basically guaranteed a trophy at that point.
Right.
I thought, boy, this is great. And so come contest day, they called 10th place. Boom. And I thought at that point it wasn't me. I'm thinking, well, man, it would sure be nice to get like a fifth or sixth or ninth place. They called my name and I thought, oh, well, you know, at least I have a trophy. That was in November. Come December, I see another poster. And at this point now, at the Junior Illinois, I really didn't know nothing about, you know, the tan of it. And maybe I didn't quite diet enough. So I got right back to the gym the next day, and I decided I was going to go into the 1978 Mr. Metropolitan and Teenage Metropolitan.
Okay.
And I want to say this had to be right in the beginning of the year because it was a very short time after the Junior Illinois.
Was that at Skokie, the Metropolitan?
I don't recall, but I think it probably was at the Leaning Tower, maybe.
Yeah, yeah.
I wind up going into this contest, and, you know, I won the teenage, and at that time there were body parts and most musculars. And I won some of those. I was usually good at winning abs, legs, and most muscular, and at times there were body parts I won, and but at that particular one, yeah, abs, legs, most muscular, teenage overall. So I was very happy. But then I also had entered the Misters, not knowing too much about the sport.
Right.
And I'm sure you remember a guy named Ray York.
Yeah, yeah.
Ray York had won that Junior Illinois in 77. And then whatever short time it was later, here I am in the Mr. Metropolitan, and I wind up taking a third place.
Mm-hmm.
I'm very happy with a third, and Ray York had taken fourth.
Really? You beat Ray York?
Yeah, just prior to that, Ray York won, and I took ninth.
Yeah, so I wow.
Going, geez, you know, I was really pumped up and basically hooked. and I went on to compete in other shows, and the AAU highly recommended that, you know what, stay away from the Misters, because I didn't know, they kind of let it go. And I continued to stick with the teenage for another year and also some of the junior shows.
Okay. So, okay.
78, you know, a year later now, I went back to the Junior Illinois and I wind up winning after taking ninth the year before.
Okay.
And, you know, continued into everything I can find from, you know, the Central USA, the Central Americas, the Midwest, and everything around the area here in Chicagoland.
Mm-hmm. Hey, Glenn, talk about the, you just mentioned the tan. Talk about the tan, because, you know, nowadays when these guys compete or when people compete, they usually have a tan. It was funny back then because now it's like everybody's the same color. But back then we had to do it on ourselves. You know, we were left to ourselves to do it. So some people would show up totally white. Some people would show up green. Some people got it perfect, but it was always funny to look at it and, you know, at the competitions because it was hard to get that color right, you know?
I don't know if you remember a guy back in the day, pretty good bodybuilder. When we were young, he was always placing up in the top five or so. And he had like the white hair.
Mm-hmm.
Trying to think of his name, but, you know, he was a very pale skin. And I always thought, you know, hey, if he had the tan down right, you know, obviously he would do better. And eventually, he got a hold of the Dietherm too. And I can't think of his name at the time, but there's so many years and so many bodybuilders and so many memories.
Right, right. Hey, Glenn, talk also about the gyms that we trained at. You mentioned, I saw you at Delch Gym the first time, and that was a real hardcore gym. And then, of course, it turned into Hammer's Gym. And this was on the suburbs in Chicago, the southwest side of Chicago, where we both grew up. Talk about that, because that was a real – people today may not understand. If these younger guys go to the gym today, it's more like big fitness centers, and it's open to everybody. But the gyms back then, it was real hardcore. I mean, you had to be really serious to go in there. It was really all bodybuilders, powerlifters, football players, mostly guys. Not a lot of amenities. You know, there was no air conditioning. There was no TVs. There was no cardio equipment. It was just free weights and hardcore training, right?
Yeah, it was a whole different ballgame. I mean, when I first started there, the first year or two, I was still training at home in my basement.
Right.
When they had out, you know, oh, our next contestant trains at home. You know, there were people in the audience that had been thinking, you know, that was some gym they haven't heard of. eventually, I found out about Delt's Gym, who, you know, a friend of ours, Joe, owned.
Mm-hmm.
And after training there, just so much more equipment to offer. And then me and my buddy, Schroeder, another competitor.
Yeah.
At times, we would drive up to Quad's Gym in Thornton, Illinois.
Okay,
Quad's was a great gym also, home of, you know, power lifter Eddie Cohen and a whole bunch of big name bodybuilders at that time were in and out of there. A lot of strong people, but it was quite the hike. So Delt's Gym had to do, and eventually Joe sold out to our buddies there, Jerry and the other guy. I forget.
Jerry, and Dave,
Jerry and Dave with Hammers, and they were equipment builders. So they had some heavy duty squat racks and machines and
leg press. You know,
now the leg presses, everything got better. The squat racks were beautiful, inclines, the benches.
Yeah.
After training there for a while, you know, I had been out of high school. I didn't do any college. I wasn't a student type. I went right to work on the railroad here in Chicago with my father. So at that point, I had taken a vacation in Arizona with my older brother. And we decided, you know what, maybe we can put the railroad career on hold and let's make a go at this and open up our own gym.
Yeah.
My buddy Joe had gave me a great deal on all the gym equipment that he had in his grandmother's basement.
Mm-hmm.
The guys, Hammers, Dave and Jerry, actually built me a ton of stuff.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they built a ton of stuff that I had brought to Phoenix myself for a great price because these guys were such good friends of mine. They wanted, you know, the best deal they can, and they were really hoping for me to succeed. So I loaded up, you know, the biggest U-Haul and the biggest trailer, and off I went and opened up my own gym in Arizona, Paradise Valley there. And I called it Hot Gym. I named it after my grandfather, who was like a best friend figure to me. I mean, this guy was nothing like a grandfather figure that people would think. We were friends. We went to the racetrack. You know, we hung out. So I named it after him.
Okay.
And, you know, I wind up having this gym for 10 years in Phoenix, which gave me the opportunity to put work on hold and just train and train people for a living and run the gym business. Just enough money to pay the bills. I wasn't looking to get rich or anything like that. It was chasing my dream.
Right.
At that point, I started competing, you know, at the juniors, nationals, and then the misters. And eventually, I want to say probably 81 or 2, I had entered the USA's, the Americas, maybe the junior America, and the nationals, the North American, North American championships. So I had stuck at a national level.
Yeah.
For the rest of my career up until 1990.
Yeah.
So it made it much more convenient having a gym instead of having to work on the railroad, you know, and then come home and train. I mean, at some point I was training at 4 a.m. before work and then finished after work.
Damn.
My dad thought I was crazy because we worked so hard on the railroad, but for me, it was like a new day when I got home. And you know, I'd finish up the workouts. It's just what I love to do.
Yeah. What did you do on the railroad, Glenn?
I was in the, at the time, I was in the track maintenance. We were changing railroad ties, putting a new rail.
Okay.
And then my father had come to me and said, hey, you know what? I got an interview all set up. Starting Monday, you go see this electrical engineer for an interview. And I got into the third rail, which the electric power for the CTA here in Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
And then got into the electricians.
Oh, no kidding. Okay.
Yeah, after a year, then I took a leave of absence, had the whole gym. When I came back to Chicago 30 years ago, I did go back to the third rail CTA work for a short period, and then eventually I switched over and I started doing outside electrical work for a contractor that did all the Illinois state work.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm working on traffic signals and street lights, and then for the last maybe 18 years, I was taking care of those changeable message signs on the highway.
Okay.
I had a very good job over there, come with a company truck. But I mm-hmm. worked a million hours at this time. You know, I wasn't competing anymore. Mm-hmm. I wasn't really working out anymore. And now these days, it's all I basically do is cardio work.
Okay. Well, Glenn, you come from a blue-collar background like I do, and, in Chicago, our parents raised us to get a job, and the job is the most important thing, and get a job with benefits, you know. So when you got a job with the railroad, was that a hard decision to make to just leave it all behind and move to Phoenix and try and open up your own gym?
You know what? My father wanted me to open a gym in Chicago and keep my railroad job.
Yeah,
I told him, Dad, it's just so beautiful in Arizona, the warm weather.
Yeah.
Out of the gym when it's, 0 degrees. So to make my dad happy and do the right thing, I took a leave of absence.
Okay.
And after a year of leave of absence, I had pretty good heavy connections there. My dad being a big boss and stuff, I extended mm-hmm. it another year. And after having the gym for 2 years, my parents had came to Phoenix to visit me. And at that point, my dad had retired, and the whole family moved out there also.
Oh, really? So, okay.
Right. My parents wound up living there the rest of their lives.
Uh-huh.
That's why I still have, two brothers and a sister there. Most of my family's there. And then my ex-wife is from Phoenix.
Mm-hmm.
She recently moved back there. And now my oldest is moving back there with her husband and two children. So
okay.
Who knows where we're going to wind up. But, Phoenix is beautiful.
Yeah. Hey, Glenn, let's go back to when you were younger and you started your training. What was your training like, when you started competing in shows and you were building your physique? Like you mentioned, you were winning best body parts for abs and legs. So those were the body parts that came up quick. But what overall was like your training like back then?
Basically, from the time I started all the way till the time I finished, I was always in love with a lot of sets, a lot of reps.
Mm-hmm.
If I was going to do chest, early days, it was always bench press. And then I'd move on to what I had here at the house would be some flies with the dumbbells.
Mm-hmm.
We did have some cables built into the rafters of the basement, and I would do cable crunch. And inclines.
Mm-hmm.
But eventually, after so many years, I got away from the bench press and I started doing a lot of smaller things first and then maybe going to dumbbell presses or incline presses. And
okay.
I realized, geez, bench wasn't so important anymore. I was making more gains for an overall physique than I was just bench all the time. And I was in love with squats. I squatted all the time.
Yeah.
Then I got, hack squats, and I got into lunges, and
mm-hmm.
I realized, I can get that development way up higher. And then I also realized that the legs came easy, so I started doing more stationary bike or elliptical or something, and I tried to get the cuts burned in.
Mm-hmm.
And
okay.
Less time on the heavy leg training and more time on trying to get the upper body bigger.
Yeah. You had really good legs as a teenager, and you didn't see too many guys back in the 70s who had really good legs, like not like today, but back then you had really outstanding legs, even when you were just a teenager.
Well, thank you, John. I I'd have to say that was probably something that came, you know, easier than the rest of my body parts. But I have to admit, I did train them very hard. I did, you know, two or three different kind of leg presses. I did tons of lunges. I love doing calf raises. I would do those every damn day.
Yeah, you did those big calves too.
Same with abs. I just, you know, I thought there's no reason for me to show up to a contest and not have the best abs here. So I trained them every day. I trained them super hard. And then I knew, you know, for abs, diet was the key.
Yeah.
So, yeah, abs and legs, I was always wishing that I had the shoulders and the chest and arms like I had abs and legs, but that came much slower for me, and I did the best I can. And eventually, to win some of those titles I won, I thought, you know what, mission accomplished. I would have loved to have gone further, but I knew at, I think I was 30 years old, that I met guys like Sean Ray and Lee Labrada and some of these big-name bodybuilders. And, well, obviously Lee's not much younger than me, but Sean was. And some of these young guys come up, and I thought, geez, I trained my whole life, and these kids are coming in looking incredible. I knew it was time to pass the torch, and eventually those guys just were insane.
Yeah. Sean Ray looked amazing when he was just a teenager. Hey, you mentioned Joe Schroeder. Talk a little bit about Joe, because I remember Joe. Joe won the first teenage show I ever entered in 1979. I couldn't believe this guy was a teenager because he was so big and thick. That guy had a lot of genetic potential, didn't he?
Yeah, Joe is actually, you know, probably if I had to say I got a best friend, he would be the man. I still talk to Joe on a regular basis.
Oh, did you? Okay.
Yeah, he was just over the other night. Good friend of mine. We met, you know, when, back in the neighborhood when he was the next block over.
Okay.
We started out together, and they actually had a contest at my high school. They asked me to guest pose, and they asked me to judge, and Joe, 1 year younger, he was the obvious winner. Nobody was even close to him. So then we got to be even closer. We continued to train together each day. Great physique. He was one of those guys that I mentioned that can just put it on so quick, and he was so big and he competed in some shows, and a few he did, he competed and did well. But I actually offered Joe an opportunity to come with me to Phoenix.
Mm-hmm.
You won't have to work. It's all we're going to do is train together. I was single at the time. You know, extra room, you can go over there, and let's just see how far we can take this. And Joe had came out there for a while, and eventually I'm not sure he got homesick, or maybe he had a girlfriend at the time and he wound up coming back to Chicago. But Joe wound up ending his career much sooner than I think he should have, because he was one of those guys that really pack on some muscle quick.
Yeah.
I would have loved to have seen if he would have sucked it out, but he became a very successful businessman. And Joe does very well for himself. So.
What kind of business is he in?
He was into restoration, where there's floods and generators, like these high rises, or even Navy ships that hurricanes and storms would be his best friend, because he would go in there with these huge dehumidifiers and dry these buildings out. And he turned it into, you know, at the time he started, it was just him and a couple guys. And by the time he ended, you know, I think he was in maybe 7 or 10 states, something crazy.
Oh, wow. And
he recently sold the company, so he's, like myself, now retired.
Okay, that's awesome. Well, I'm glad to hear he did well, because, yeah, I remember Joe, unbelievable genetics. Me and my friend Dennis used to talk about him all the time, about how this kid just had such great thickness, you know, and size, and he really could have gone far, I think.
Yeah, I believe so. Yeah, he has a house in Las Vegas.
Really? But, okay.
Yeah, and then he also has a big house in Orland Park, and I live in New Lenox, so we're pretty close together there.
Okay.
Joe, I don't know if you're aware of this, you remember Mario.
Yeah, Mario Neves.
Yeah, okay. Mario was a friend of mine and Joe's, and Mario eventually got divorced, and Joe married Mario's ex-wife.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's a crazy story, so it worked for him. And, you know, I remember Mario telling me and Joe at a seminar that he wasn't worried about the guys that he competed with because he knew who they were and he knew what they were going to look like and he knew who was tough and who wasn't so tough. He was worried about guys like you, me, and Joe, young guys coming up. And I thought, okay, this guy's pulling my leg, perhaps. Are you serious? And eventually, you know, I go into the Mr. America in 1984, Pasadena, California, and I was standing there with Mario, and he's at this point, man, I'd be so making a comeback now. He did win the, I think, the Junior USA or Junior America or something like that. So Mario's telling me he would really be happy on this day to take top 10 and get a trophy or get the pose on stage, I guess it was. And I thought, geez, top 10, I would be disappointed in myself. I was looking for a trophy and being a top five. So I eventually, you know, the next day you get the contest. I wind up taking fifth place. So I got the trophy and I was happy. And Mario didn't get the top 10. He was 13th. And I thought at that point, geez, now I remembered back to what he said. Mm-hmm. And I thought, here's the young guys taking over. Joe's married to his ex-wife. I'm winning the Mr. I'm, you know, in placing in the Mr. America and he's not. And
Not
sure what Mario's up to these days, but he was always good to me. And Lance Strayer was a big help. But Lance always would tell me about how much I love to diet and compete. And he's like, he made me feel good. I thought, you know what? This is the easy part. Me trying to get as big as Lance is the impossible part. You know, but after I had won the Mr. America, Sports Star Supplements had called me and offered me a little sponsorship and helped me out, you know, along the way. And then I got to even know Lance a little more, where, you know, he invited me to parties and things like that. And I wound up going into another Mr. World after the America, which was NABBA Mr. World in Las Vegas. I had won my class there, but I had lost the overall to a guy from Canada. And I just thought to myself, well, you know, I was happy. I think that was probably my best condition I ever achieved, even more so than the world, the first world and the Mr. America. But, you know, I could only be happy with my results of myself. Mm-hmm. You know, when somebody would beat me, I had no problem raising their arm in victory and saying, hey, great job.
Yeah.
Because I took and I knew how hard it was. And eventually I, you know, wound up going into a lot of NPC shows. And then I was looking for pro qualifiers, this North American Championship in Seattle. Okay.
Yeah, I remember that.
Maybe this is the way to go. So I went in that in 89 and then again in 90. In both years, I had won my class, but both years I wasn't able to win the overall. So I had not received a pro card, but at that point I had realized that, you know, I believe I took this as far as I can. You know, I'm 30 years old. I had a couple kids and wanted more kids. I eventually had no problem stepping away and letting the younger guys take over.
Yeah. Hey, you also competed against a guy who was a real freak, and a lot of people may not know his name, but it was Tim Belknap. Back in the day, Tim went on to win the Mr. America back in 81. But we saw him when he was coming up, going into Junior Illinois and then the Mr. Illinois and then the Mr. Midwest. Talk a little bit about Tim, because you competed against him when he wasn't so good, right? And then you competed with him when he started really getting good, because he got real good real fast, didn't he?
Yeah, correct. Like you said, Tim was known as the crazy man, hot-headed. We competed against each other at a young age. But he was never a concern of mine. I was always able to beat Tim.
Yeah.
And, you know, I never worried much about him. So then back in the day, me and my buddy Joe Schroeder, we took a ride to Kentucky. I wanted to compete in a contest out there. And I don't even recall the name of the show. I showed up over there and I was in, you know, contest shape and hoping to get a trophy, but just basically having a vacation and fun.
Yeah.
That's how much I like to compete. And here comes Tim. Now, this was the first time I seen Tim very big. I thought, oh my God, I don't know how somebody can get that big and sick and full as quick as he did.
Yeah.
I know he's diabetic. And I'm sure, you know, maybe that had something to do with it. I don't know how the chemistry works, but
right.
After competing that day with Tim, here I wind up taking a fifth place, and Tim took a sixth.
And wow,
He was so upset, but looking at him, the potential was there. I thought, man, if he just keeps getting cut. I mean, he had beautiful shape. He was super big. And I thought that's all he's got to do is, you know, get cut. Sure enough, he went into a couple shows prior to the Mr. America in 81.
Mm-hmm.
Every show got a little more cut.
Yeah,
Mr. Illinois, then the Mr. Midwest. And then he shows up at the Mr. America as, I think at that point it was weight class.
Like heavy.
And
yeah.
He was a bit heavy. And here our buddy Lance Strayer was a heavyweight.
Right.
Just so ripped, and I mean, shocker to Lance and everybody else that here Tim wins and Lance, you know, wins his class.
Yeah.
Eventually, they went to, you know, both win the universe. No, I don't know if Tim won the universe, but I know Lance did.
Yeah, Lance did, but Tim didn't.
Right. And because they seen what kind of jackass that Tim could be. I think he got folded myself. But, you know, they both went on to turn professional, and you know, God bless. As crazy as Tim was, he was in Phoenix one time. He was guest posing. I believe I might have been judging a contest at this point, and he wound up coming back to my gym, and we wound up having lunch and hanging out. And
oh, really?
So just incredibly crazy that we were almost contest enemies, and now here we were, you know, become friends. And you know, I was happy that he was successful, and eventually. You know, a couple years later, I go on to win the America myself also. It just took longer.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it was a really cool story, you know. And I want to say, I believe Lee Labrada was at the Teenage Illinois, and he was, like, one of the smallest kids sitting in the corner, a couple years younger. He wasn't even ready to compete, but yet he was there. And then eventually, I believe it was his sister, married Samir Benute.
Yeah.
And they became buddies. And boy, the next couple of times I seen Lee, now Lee Labrada happens to be one of my favorite bodybuilders of all times.
Mm-hmm.
Just a beautiful physique. He didn't have to carry the mask, that wasn't his style, but he carried so much symmetry and damn near flawless. A huge fan of Lee Labrada.
Now, you mentioned Tim was crazy, Belknap. What was he doing that was crazy? Because you competed with him before anybody really knew him.
Well, he would be one of those guys backstage, you know. He just believed he should win everything, you know.
Yeah.
I want to say he might even smash a trophy or two along the way. and I could be wrong on that, but, you know, he was one of those guys that, you know, most of us, I think, learned maybe through competing that, you know, kill him with kindness.
Yeah.
Show some respect, raise your arm in victory. And it might help you the next contest.
Right.
I think, you know, that might have hurt Tim in the beginning, but then eventually he just got too good and they couldn't turn him away.
Yeah.
And, like I said, once he came to Phoenix, he was guest posing, I believe. He come by the gym there and we hung out and I thought, geez, all of a sudden the guy finally learned some respect and some manners.
Yeah, and just took him a while.
Yeah, it took him a while, so. I'm not sure how he's doing these days, but, yeah, he was one along the way that we bumped heads from, I think, the beginning to close to the end. And he kind of passed me by there once he won the America and got to the bigger stuff, but then he realized it was time for him to hang it up also.
Right. Did you get to know, Sergio Oliva pretty good? Cause Sergio was, also from Chicago like we were. And, of course, he's one of the myths. You know, he is the myth, and he's one of the biggest names in the sport. So we got a chance to see Sergio when he was at his best.
Yeah, I would say, you know, Sergio Oliva was the most impressed human being that I've ever seen.
Yeah, me too.
I've seen most of all the guys, you know, that you see in the books and everything else.
Mm-hmm.
I'll tell you a quick story. Back when I worked on the railroad, I had heard Sergio Oliva was a Chicago cop, and he was in that Rogers Park neighborhood.
Yeah.
So every day at lunchtime, I would come down off the railroad, and I'd walk up and down the street trying to find a bite to eat, and perhaps maybe someday I would see him.
Yeah.
And I seen a couple of police officers, and I thought, man, is that him? He, you know, because that cop looks pretty big. And so I finally, one day, I walked into a deli. I had just, gave up on hope to meet him.
Mm-hmm.
The deli I happened to walk into, I seen somebody that I didn't believe, you know, could ever look the way he looked.
Right.
He was sitting at a counter, and he had
okay.
two big submarine sandwiches, a whole sack of four or five bananas, and two cans of Coca-Cola. And the minute I laid eyes on him, I knew exactly who he was. I had just walked up, probably right when I started competing,
mm-hmm.
and I introduced myself, and, you know, I said, Sergio, it is such an honor to meet you. And I'm looking at his arms. I just couldn't believe what this man would look like. He was so
right.
in a Chicago police officer's uniform, so big in the right places and so small in the right places. I had came home from work 5-6 o'clock in the afternoon. And, you know, we'd be eating dinner as a family, sit on the couch, you know, and talk to my dad, you know. And I talked to my dad till 10 o'clock at night. And finally, after about 4 or 5 hours, my dad said, okay, enough about this guy. he did not want to hear it no more. And I'm trying to, you have never seen it. And then I wind up, you know, competing in all these teenage shows that were in the Chicagoland area.
Yeah.
More than the time that, you know, I would compete and get a trophy or win, Sergio would be handing out the trophies and guest posing. And
right.
So, and then I had to remind him, I'm like, I'm not sure if you remember who I am, but I walked in the deli one day and I met you there. Oh, yeah. You know, with his squeaky voice. Yeah, I remember. And then my buddy Joe Schroeder was from the north side, and he had trained at the gym where Sergio was several occasions.
Yeah.
But I just could not believe how impressive of a human being that he was.
I know.
They just, maybe on stage, yeah, there was, you know, better bodybuilders, classical guys like Zane, and even Labrada being a middleweight.
Yeah.
You know, obviously Arnold's the king. He had everything going.
Mm-hmm.
And then eventually you got some of these big guys that you see nowadays. But just in street clothes or in a officer uniform or walking into an auditorium to hand out trophies or standing up there guest posing.
Yeah.
I don't. Anybody was more impressive to me.
Yeah, I agree, Glenn. I try to describe to people today how he looked and how impressive he was, and it's hard to describe it because he had that tiny waist and then those clothes he used to wear. Remember, like with the big medallion, he had the shirt buttoned down. He had the sleeves that were cut so his arms could fit in them. His arms were so big. It just
mind-blowing. Everything he had to be tailor-made.
Right, right.
His proportions were just so phenomenal. You know, small knees, small ankles, small waist, small wrist.
Right.
Yet he carried such amount of mass, and not like that other, what's the big guy that tried to compete later on?
Ronnie Coleman? Not Ronnie Coleman.
No, this is guy Richards maybe or something.
Oh, Victor Richards, yeah.
Yeah, you know, okay, he was a big guy, but he didn't impress me at all. You know, he was just...
Right.
And I'm not trying to talk him down. I mean... Hey, God bless him. He carried a ton of muscle, but he didn't look anything near the way Sergio, you knew he was a bodybuilder, not just a strong lifter guy, you know?
Right, exactly.
So I couldn't say enough good things about Sergio. He was always great to me, handing me, I couldn't tell you how many trophies over the years,
mm-hmm.
being in the Chicagoland area, everything I was entering, he was the guy to hand them out because, you know, how he was during the day, just such a, well, that's why they call him the myth.
Right, right.
Yeah, see him to believe him.
And I remember when he would walk into the auditoriums, Glenn, like the place would just go crazy. It was, you don't ever see nothing like that today. I mean, he would walk into the show when the place was already packed and the whole audience would turn around and like start applauding as he walked down the aisle. I mean, he was like the king in Chicago.
Oh, I would imagine a king wherever he went, because like I say, there's bodybuilders now, all these greats, if they got clothes on, sure, you could tell they lift and oh, they're really big, but this guy looked like it was just, you can't explain it.
He was like a superhero or something.
Exactly.
Let's talk about when you won the America, because you were in it quite a few times. I remember in 1984, a lot of guys from Chicago were going in it that year. And I think you took fifth place in the short class. And that was everybody's dream who was in bodybuilding. I remember when we were young, was to win that AAU Mr. America contest. So in 85, you take, looking at your contest history online here, it says you took ninth place in the short class. So what did you do from 85 to 86, because 86 was your year. Like you said, you won that Mr. World contest, the AU, and then you won the America, and you won the whole thing. You won the overall.
Okay, well, start when I went to California and Pasadena there for the 84, like I said, I was going into that Mr. America with the dream of taking a trophy home.
Okay.
And exactly what happened. I go in there, and I get what I was shooting for. I took fifth, and there was, I want to say, I believe there was like 105 guys. It just seemed like everybody and their brother were there that day to compete.
Yeah.
And Joe Miko, and I'm seeing all these big name guys. It was incredible, and I was real happy to take fifth. I knew at this point I can hang with these guys. So back to Phoenix, and I started training, and I'm getting ready for, you know, the next year, 1985. I'm going to go back. Now, this year, I'm hoping that, you know, I could do damage and perhaps win kind of thing. And getting back to the diet we talked about, I had gotten contest shape. I thinking, okay, I'm going to carb up, get in here, and see what we could do. Well, the night before the contest, I usually would basically eat almost whatever I wanted, because I thought it never really mattered, and that might have been one of the only times that it sure backfired on me. I wound up going to a Benihana's the night before the show, and boy, something to do with the sodium and the reaction, and
I just
had no cuts, and I couldn't get them to come out, and I was so frustrated with myself, and I got what I deserved. You know, I wasn't cheated. I showed up. And for one of the few times out of all the shows I entered, I blew it, and I knew it. At this point, I thought, man, I was so, I don't even want to say mad at myself. I had learned from my mistake. I went back to the gym, and it wasn't a month or two later, I was back in pretty good shape where I wanted it to be. And I continued to train that whole year. I was just waiting for the next opportunity to come back. Because this time I'm not making any mistakes. Win or lose, that's not the point. I want to be in the best possible shape I can be in.
Okay.
So I got all the way to contest time. Now I left Arizona, and I had told myself I wanted to act like I never left Phoenix. I had brought my griddle with me to make these whole wheat pancakes that Lance Dreher introduced me to.
Okay.
I brought my microwave with me. I never left the hotel to go eat in any restaurants. I basically acted like I was still in Phoenix and still at the gym.
Right.
And I didn't change a thing. And I came in, and being in the shape that I wanted to be, I was happy with that. Win or lose. And beating a guy like Jerry Scalise for the short class.
Yep.
I thought, okay, you know, this is fantastic. I went in my class. This is great. He's a great bodybuilder, but I do think, you know, I maybe got him on conditioning that day. And you know how it is when you compete. Some days you show up a little sharper and that's enough. And other days, maybe not. But so after winning a short class, I thought to myself, well, geez, Marlon Darton, who's a friend of mine from Tucson, Arizona, incredible shape every year, winning his class. 85, I told him, I said, Marlon, I think you're going to win this whole thing. And again, he wins his class and don't win the overall. And now to be up there against a guy like this I've been watching for years, because I can't even guess how many years he won his class. It seemed to me like he was winning his class every year. So, and then I see this monster, Phil Hill, and this other guy, Doug Brignoli from California, super symmetrical, always in shape, clean, good-looking guy. I thought, you know what? He's got the look that they're looking for. And so I just, you know, was hoping to do the best I can do. And when they called my name, I was just so honored and blessed. I thought to myself, you know, is it because I pray harder than everybody else? Is it? And they come back with the magazines talking about total package. And, okay, I'll take the total package every time, you know, as long as I could take the trophy with me. But I really felt blessed to be able to finally have a title that I thought really meant my whole life to me, because this is all I ever dreamed of. And I've been going to bed praying since the day I picked up weights, and finally it came true. And at that point then I thought, you know what, if I can continue to carry on and maybe, you know, professional bodybuilder and this and that, but obviously that didn't happen. You know, I see guys like Mendenhall and Rory Liedemeyer and such great physiques, you know, that never got the pro card. And I say to myself, you know, I know exactly how they feel. And then there's other guys, you know, now they're giving these cards away like they're candy. And God bless them. You know, I wish it would have been different back in the day. But at that time, it was so hard to get a card. Like I said, when I went into that North American Championship, the first year, that guy that beat me, I thought, you know what? He's got them shoulders that look so good standing there in the lineup. I had no problem losing against this guy. I thought, okay, I'm not done yet.
I just talked to Doug Brignoli last week, and we were talking about that contest, and he said how tough that was, because he said every class winner was so good. But I remember I talked to Eddie Cohen, and I think Eddie was at that Mr. World you won that year. And I saw Eddie right when he came back, and he goes, man, he goes, Glenn, he just dominated that contest. He goes, that's how an overall winner should look.
That's great, man. You know, I ran into Eddie a couple of weeks ago at the Costco.
Oh, really? Wow.
Yeah. I was in Orland. I think it's in Orland Park. I had to go up and just say, Eddie, I don't know if you remember me, but I've seen you around a few times at Quad's Gym, and you had basically did some lifting at the Mr. World that I happened to be over there, and I just had to say hello. I couldn't walk by and not introduce myself and say, it's been an honor to watch you do what you do. Because talk about a strong person, and the guy was just incredible.
I'm sure Eddie remembered you, right, Glenn?
Yeah, he did, and it was cool to bump heads with him there in the store in such a low-key fashion. But I was never into the powerlifting, but just being from the same area and being around him and watching him do a few lifts at some of my shows.
So then, Glenn, after you won that America, you just kept going, and you went over to the MPC, because back then the MPC and the AU were separate. So if you wanted to get your pro card and compete in the Olympia and stuff, then you had to go back to the MPC. So even after you won the America and the Mr. World, you had to sort of start over again at the national level at the MPC, right?
Well, I wouldn't say start over, because like back in, I believe it was 1982 when I first moved to Phoenix, or maybe I was still here, I had went into the Mr. USA and I took third in my class. And I believe it was Donnie Gay who won the class.
Yeah, I remember that.
To myself, well, geez, maybe I'm a new guy. I got to, you know, pay my dues, or maybe the next year, you know, I'll be the guy to win the class and see what happens. And so I had basically jumped back and forth from the AAU and the NPC for quite a few years. And I had been back to the USA, I think, a couple of times I took third in my class. And then a couple of times I took fifth in my class.
Mm-hmm.
And then every time I had gone into the nationals, I think the best I did there was fifth in my class, I believe.
Okay.
So then I at North American Championships, Like I said, I won my class both times I went. And the one year I lost against that Ali, I think his name was Ali something, another friend of Lance from Canada.
But okay.
He had the shoulders there that I thought, you know what, that's the one thing I'm really shooting for. I wish I had those shoulders just standing there in the lineup and, and could never seem to get those to develop, you know, quite like I wanted. But losing to him, I thought, well, he's got what I want, I guess. And other departments like legs and abs, I thought maybe I had him, but I didn't have a problem losing to him pretty overall.
Okay.
The following year, I entered, sure you're aware of Nimrod King.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, I showed up over there, and, you know, Weeder's people were telling me, oh, you know, you look great. You know, chances are this is your year, and all you'd have to do is send a letter requesting a pro card, and you've been around long, you're not going to be denied. And so maybe I was dreaming a little too much, but the thing that got me, John, and, you know, I hate to be a sore loser type thing, but at that day, Nimrod King, for anybody who was at the show, would tell you, he was smooth as a baby's butt.
Mm-hmm.
And I was really shocked that he was able to win, and boom, they called his name. Contest is over. Then the magazines came out very quickly. It seemed like, oh my God, I never seen a contest where the photos came out as quick as they did.
Hmm.
And they had every photo they used was from a different contest.
Oh, really? Wow.
I swear to God, I don't know if it was from a week or two before or a week or two after, but because Nimrod King, don't get me wrong, he is a good bodybuilder.
Yeah, he's a freak.
He's a better bodybuilder than I was. He was not better than me that day, and I really thought, well, that's his fault, you know, and just like, you know, you get into these shows and, okay, so I beat Phil Hill at the Mr. America, you know, 6 months, a year later, like a Lee Labrada. You know, I used to beat Lee Labrada, to beat Tim Belknap, and like even Ronnie Coleman and Dorian Yates, you see these guys as they're coming up, and they're good, but eventually you see how great they become.
Mm-hmm.
And I was very disappointed because Nimrod King was already great, but he didn't deserve to win that day.
Right.
And they gave it to him on his reputation or maybe his whatever the
potential.
Word would be.
Potential, yeah.
They knew he was, you know, a better bodybuilder than me, and sure enough, you know, they gave him the title. So that had a lot to do with me saying, you know what, I think I took it as far as I can, maybe ready to hang it up and let these. I kind of felt like I didn't need to prove anything to anybody else no more.
Right.
But I also was smart enough to realize I took it probably as far as I can. But one of the very, very few times that I was disappointed on the results.
Yeah.
You know, you don't want to be a sore loser. You don't want to be that guy that cries wolf or whatever.
People may not realize back then you had to win the whole thing. You had to win the overall to turn pro. It wasn't like you just win your class. So I think you lost that was like a 4-3 vote. I mean, you just lost by one vote and you could have won the overall and then got your pro card. So that's how close it was.
Right. Well, just like the America, I won by one vote.
Right.
Yeah, you take the good with the bad, for sure.
Yeah.
It's what kind of sport it is. And, you know, sometimes you look down at the judges panel and you say, geez, there's seven judges here, and, you know, these two are from the Midwest. All right, this one's from the Phoenix area. So right off the bat, you know, you got a fair shake that these people would love to see you win because you knew this guy in California, you knew this guy from the Midwest, this guy from here to. So it does make a difference, you know, and I'm not saying these are cheaters or anything, but look at it yourself. If you compete, you're judging seven guys, this guy you know, and it's so close, it's just human nature. You're going to go towards a guy you've seen or you've known. Or, I mean, I've judged myself, and it's like, okay, I've seen this guy a few times, and boy, this is the best he ever looked. This guy here I never saw before. But it's super close. It's basically, it can go either way.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You lean towards the one, even when you're not trying to.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I don't know if you knew this, Glenn. I don't think I ever told you, but I was judging in Chicago at that time. And what year was that that you took second to Nimrod King? Was that 88, 89?
Yeah, or it could have been 89 or 90 or 88 and 89.
Yeah. Well, whatever year it was, it was right after that contest. And they had some national level judge come in, and he was head judge in one of our shows. And I was sitting next to him, and he was talking about that contest because I think he was at the North American. He must have been one of the guys that voted for you because he was going on and on about how great you looked. He goes, yeah, I've seen Glenn compete before on the national level, but he goes, man, he really dialed it in this time, you know. So he sounded like he was one of the guys that voted for you. He was pretty disappointed you didn't win either.
Yeah, that happens and stuff. Yeah, I appreciate that. You know, nothing you can do these days, but just to have the card and, like, to have the America and a couple worlds. And even back in the day, I don't know, you remember Mike Mongovian or something?
Yeah, Mike Mongovian, yeah, he was a great bodybuilder.
Yeah, I had won, I think I had won my class at a USA, and he won the overall. And he was like a middleweight, looked real good. And I don't know whatever happened to him. But so I've been going back from this USA, I believe, from 81 all the way till 1990.
Yeah.
AAU, NPC, you know. And then I was just real happy and totally blessed that I do have a few titles that sound impressive, you know.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you were a great bodybuilder in my eyes, Glenn. I remember, like I mentioned before in interviews, you were like the first real bodybuilder I ever saw. I remember one time I was a teenager. I think I was like 16 or 17 training at USA. Or not USA, it was Delts Gym that Joe owned. And right. It was the summertime. You came walking in. You just had shorts on, just workout shorts, and you were totally ripped. And I remember I went home and I was telling my brother, I go, man, you should see this guy, Glenn Canary. This guy looks like an unbelievable bodybuilder, you know. So I remember you from all the way back then. I mean, you were just such a big inspiration for me and a lot of other younger guys coming up.
Oh, thank you, John. And I'm really proud and happy to see that you continue to live in the sport. It's just a great way to carry out your life, man.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I'm like you. You know, I love it and just follow my passion. And I think once you're a bodybuilder, you're always a bodybuilder, right?
Well, it sure seems to be that way. I mean, I sit here and, you know, kids will – we'll be sitting around a table and somebody asks a question or they got friends over that perhaps see a photo for the first time and, oh, yeah, that's my dad. And they're like, come on, you got to be kidding me. And here I am, almost 60 years old. And like you said, it doesn't matter because once you got the title, once you're Mr. America, you're always Mr. America. So
that's true. That's true.
I still thank God every day that I have that title. And it's no joke. I thank God, like, thank you, because it means the world to me, you know. It breaks down who a big part of me is and who a big part of me was.
Yeah, I was glad to see you win that, too, because, like I said, I remember seeing you compete ever since you were a teenager or since you were 20. And, man, I know how much you put into it, and I know how many titles you went into and how many contests you went into. And I know you did that America several times. So when I heard, I think you were in Arizona at the time. So when I heard that you won that year, man, I was just so happy for you.
Yeah, three times the charm, I guess, huh, John?
Right, right.
And I remember when you come out to the gym there, too.
Yeah, yeah, I went out and visited you in 1988. I still got that picture of me with Hoppy Jim's t-shirt on there.
Exactly, you know, cool stuff.
Yeah, and you trained, you had Mike Ashley training there for a while, too, right, out in Phoenix?
Yeah, Mike was a great guy. He had a bunch of clients that he would train, and I told him, I said, Mike, that's no problem. I'm not looking for any of your money. I want you to, you know, your money and put it towards whatever you need to do. As long as they have a membership at my gym, feel blessed and honored. Go ahead and train them here. No problem. And and then I had a few clients of my own, and they were all friends with Mike's clients. And we had, some reason, we had a bunch of dentists. My guy was a cosmetic specialist, and he had an orthodontist and a oral surgeon and a couple of their wives. And, so Mike, he trained at a few different gyms, but he had, you know, a handful of clients at my club, and obviously he trained himself there, you know, quite a bit.
Yeah.
And he was winning some of the stuff at the same time I was winning.
Yeah, yeah.
very, very good bodybuilder. I mean, he knew him, and he was training at my gym. He was always in contest shape. I did see him come to Chicago one time up north, and I actually, Chuck gave me a ticket to go watch him. Mm-hmm. Chuck Sandler, you know, who owns USA Gym, a good friend of ours.
Right.
So I went up to watch Mike. Was the only time that I seen him a little bit out of shape.
And
obviously, this was years later, but I was just surprised because I've never seen him out of shape ever.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
Like, oh, I'm a little smooth here. And, oh, I understand it's a guest appearance. It's not a contest. But, and I'm trying to bad rap the guy. You know, you can't stay like contest day, you know, yourself.
You know? Yeah, you can't stay like that all the time.
Great to see him. It was great to hang with him for an evening there.
Mm-hmm.
And eventually, you know, Mike did very well. And he won at, what was the night of the champions or something there? Or Arnold's Classic, maybe?
He won the Arnold Classic, yeah, because the year they drug tested it, Sean Ray beat him, but then they took the title away from Sean Ray. So then, yeah, he ended up being the second Arnold Classic winner in 1990.
Right. Yeah, I remember that well. And obviously, Mike was, you know, happy to win and get the check and everything else, but he was also disappointed to lose the glory that night, you know?
Yeah, yeah, they never really rewarded him on stage, so that was a shame.
Well, the one thing is, you know, Sean Ray proved himself and went on to be one of the best, I think, ever.
Oh, yeah, me too, yeah.
Yeah, Sean Ray, you know, I'm friends with Sean on Facebook and competed against him a couple of times there and always been a true gentleman. He was one of those guys that, for me, when I seen him, I thought, okay, this guy, you know, the great shape, always in, you know, great condition.
Yep.
The symmetry, he just had the look. And that one year I thought maybe he should have won the Olympia.
Yeah, me too.
True bodybuilder in and out. Definitely an inspiration and probably put me into my retirement because I thought, man, this right. young kid just looks beautiful, you know?
Yeah, that year.
Total, that year you know, they called me Total Package when I won the America. My definition of total package, you know, should have Sean Ray next to the definition.
Right.
He had it going on and a great guy. Just like Lee Labrada. I mean, he was, you know, I can't say enough about Labrada. Just a flawless looking physique.
It was a pleasure to talk to you again. And the pleasure was really mine because you were a big inspiration to me when I was growing up. And I'm glad we get to talk to each other once in a while on Facebook. And it was great we got to hear about your career because I keep telling people, all my friends and stuff, how great of a bodybuilder you were. Some people may not know your name because, you know, you didn't compete in the Olympia or whatever, but I think you were one of the greatest bodybuilders back in the 80s. And you were always an inspiration to me, real great guy. So it was really great to get to talk to you about your career.
Hey, John, pleasure is all mine, man. I appreciate you giving me the call and it was great talking to you. You know, next time you come out to visit the parents or something, look me up. We could grab a beer together and a sandwich or something.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. My parents live right in Orland, so they got to be right down the street from you.
All right, John. Sounds great, huh?
All right, Glenn. Thanks again, buddy. Thanks for the opportunity.
All right. Thank you, buddy.
All right. Take care. All right. Thank you for listening to another episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. I want to thank Old School Labs and Florida Alternative Medicine for sponsoring this episode. And I also want to thank Glenn Kinnear again for such a great interview. I really enjoyed going back in time and talking to Glenn. And as you can hear, he's really an old school Chicago guy. And say what you want about Chicago, but they have some of the best people out there. Really down to earth, really just real people. And I really got a sense of that talking to Glenn again. So it was great to reconnect with him. Next week, we will be joined by former Gold's Gym owner Ken Sprague. So I'm really looking forward to that interview. Ken has a lot of history behind him, and we're probably going to get some really good stories when we talk to him. So join us next week on the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. Take care, everybody. We'll see you next week.